Okay, Rabbosai, today's daf in Masechet Nazir, brought to you from Yerushalayim Yir HaKodesh, is daf Samach Gimel, and we're holding right here at the Halakha Mishnah. So, this Mishnah is about to introduce a completely new concept. We've met this concept before when we were learning Pesachim. We learned about the idea of Tumas HaTahom, and it's come up now and then. But now we finally have gotten to the main sugya, and that is that there is a special Halakha L'Shem Sinai, we'll see as its mocha, that teaches us that there are different dinim about tuma that is known in the world versus tuma that isn't known in the world. So there's two completely different levels of known. There's a question of known to you or in doubt by you. And over there we know that for some reason, the Torah has told us that it makes a difference as to whether the suffix is a tuma in Rishus HaYochid or in Rishus HaRabim. And that, of course, Rishus HaYochid, Rishus HaRabim, is in terms of how many people are present. So that's a remarkable idea in itself, the extent of the impact of the tuma in the world and the knowledge of it is central to the tuma for some reason. Seems very mysterious. But then there's another concept, and that is tuma that apparently is simply unknown. So somebody maybe was trapped in a cave, died in the cave. Nobody knew what happened to him. Body was never seen, never recovered, fell into some water, has been covered by water. Nobody ever knew that this tumah was there. That is a special halacha L'Shem Sinai, that over there, even in the event that we find out about it afterwards, since it's unknown at the time, it makes no difference to us, lahalacha, but only if the issue is already over. Meanwhile, after having been exposed to this tumah, which you knew nothing about, you brought your Korban Pesach. Then you find out, oh my God, I was tumah the whole time. It doesn't matter because that tumah was not present in the world. Why not? Because nobody knew about it. An amazing idea. If in the meanwhile, you have managed to become a completely completed nazir, you did your giluach, you brought your korbanos, and then all of a sudden you find out, oh my gosh, I was tameh all along. No, you weren't tameh all along. Why? Nobody knew about it. So this new concept, which we call the difference between tumah yedu'ah, tumah that is consciously part of the world, or tumah that is not consciously part of the world, is an amazing halacha, and we're introducing it here in terms of Naziris for the first time. So it turns out that it comes with certain caveats, and that is that it only is relevant to us if we're looking back. In other words, we've already defined the situation. Now we're looking back, we're going to redefine the situation. You're completed your Korban Pesach. Now we're going to look back and we're going to say, no, it was no good because you were tummy. You completed your Nazirut. So now we're going to look back and we're going to say, nope, it was no good. Why? Because at the time you were, we won't say that. We won't look back. But if we have to look forward, so you find out, oh my gosh, last week I had walked over that place and they just discovered a body there, a person that had been missing for years. Nobody knew about that tumah ever. In that case, we're looking forward, and you want to know, can I now eat truma? No, of course you can't eat truma. You passed over a mace. Doesn't matter whether anybody knew about it at the time that you passed by it. So that's caveat number one. This only works if it's ex post facto. To define the future makes no difference. It only defines the past. Then let's think about the other caveat. The other caveat is that you started off tahor, and you were not coming to make yourself tahor. And at the time that you're making yourself tahor, little did you know that in the mikveh that you were going to, there was a dead body. You see, so if you had started off tameh, then you can't change the status and say, oh, when I went to the mikveh and then I went brought my Korban Pesach, it was okay because nobody knew that there was a body under the mikveh. Not true. Because that only works where you're starting with a cheskas taira. So therefore, we have three interlocking factors. Did anybody in the world have consciousness of this tumor at any time? That's our first question. Was the awareness of the tumor before the event or the issue that arises because of the tumor? If it was, doesn't matter whether anyone knew about it at the time. And was the status of the individual who's coming to look back and see whether he could view himself as tummy or tahar, was his status at the time a status of tumah or a status of tyra? What's his chazaka? Okay, so those three issues are now going to become clear to us in the sugya. And we start off with this finding out about things and in the past. So a nazir did his whole deal, kept his aziras, did his giluach, and then he found out that he was tummy. And all the time that he was keeping his aziras, he actually had been exposed to tuma. So it depends. Im tuma yidu'ah. So if this was a tuma that someone in the world was conscious of, so then he loses, he's soter. If it's tumat hatahon, then eno soter. So this is the concept of tumat tahom, tuma that is covered essentially in the deeps under the earth, as if it's not yet part of the world. So in that case, it is not going to affect him. Im achalogila, but if he hadn't completed his naziris, and now the question is, can I complete the naziris or not? So then it is soter. It only works if it's all about the past, not if it's about the future. So let's talk about when this works. Ketzad. Yaradli tpo b'mara. So a guy is going to be tevel himself, and he's going into this cave where there's a mikvah. And at the end, we find a mate. Tzaf al pi ma'ara. So we've got this mate, and he's floating in the water that the person had gone into. And what we're not sure about is whether the mate was floating underneath the top of the cave at the same time that I was in the cave, in which case it would have been mitame me. There, he's definitely tame. Why? Because this is not called tumat hatahom. A floating body is in a position in which it's already entered into the world. Now, let me explain to you. We don't have to know that somebody knows about the mate. And it's not a matter of our assuming that somebody knows about the mate. It's a definition. When we talk about tuma that has entered into the world, what we mean is that it has entered into the interactions of the world and therefore is open to human consciousness. So therefore, since if someone would come along now, they would see the mate, this is tuma yidu'a. And therefore, if I have a suffix about it, did I touch the, well, not touch, we'll see why not touch. But was I under the cave at the same time that the dead body was under the cave? Then it was a typical suffix tuma, reshut hayachid, and the nazir would be tummy. Now, there's another, he might be named Mishuka Bekarka Mara. What if the body is found after it's been missing for years, and there it is sunken at the bottom underneath the water or in the floor of the cave? So now it is a tuma, which is called tuma tahom. There's no exposure to the world. What's the din over there? Then there's yet a third factor. The third factor is, what was the status of the nazir at the time? If he was yoredli taher mitumat mit, he was tamei before he went into the mara. He went to the mikveh in that mara, and now it's discovered, after he came out of the mikveh, it's discovered that there was a mate that was tumat atahom. Then he's tamei. Because in order for tumat atahom not to affect you, you have to have had a cheskas taira at the time. But suppose you were going down because it was a hot day. You were tahor. You went into this cave to cool off. You're rad laker. And then after you go out of the cave, we discover that there's a body that was underneath the floor of the cave. what would be the din over there? If it's tumat hatahom, and you were not going to become tahar because you were tahar, you remain tahar. And therefore, in that case, you would be tahar. Shechazkat tameh tameh, vechazkat tahar tahar. Why do we say that? Shiraglayim ledavar. Now these words, raglayim ledavar, are very confusing. The words raglayim ledavar usually mean that we have grounds to suspect. For instance, we use the concept of raglayim ledavar when it comes to the tumat hasotah. And that's exactly where the main sugya of raglayim ledavar is, which of course is the whole basis of safek tumah b'rishut harabim and safek tumah b'rishut hayachid, as we've seen many times. So we say that over there, we believe an eid echad, and there's no way for her to ever become tahar. And for that matter, until she's proven innocent, we consider her to be guilty, and she's a surah to her husband. That's because we say raglayim ledavar. A woman that has been warned not to be alone with someone by her husband, and then is discovered alone, it looks awfully suspicious. That's what raglayim ledavar usually means. Nobody has ever called a chazaka raglayim ledavar. That's a very strange use of the word raglayim ledavar, as the Rishonim point out. This is not a standard raglayim ledavar. So Rush speaks out because it has nothing to do with suspicion. Chazaka has nothing to do with suspicion. It just means that it does make sense to distinguish between a case where there's a cheskas tuma and a case where there's a cheskas taira. But the problem is, it doesn't need to make sense. Because part of the actual limud of the idea that there's such a concept called tumas hatahom is this distinction between a tuma that has a cheskas taira and a tuma that has a cheskas tuma. Can I get to see anybody so I can? This is complicated stuff. If I can't see you, I honestly don't know that I'm getting through to you. So please do me a favor, just for a few minutes. I need your, this is called Teras HaTahim, where you have absolutely, it's lo noida ba'olam, whether the Tera is there or it's not. I'm serious. It's exactly the same point. It's a lovely expression of the idea in the daf. It simply is irrelevant to the world whether we're learning or not, because nobody is conscious of the fact that we're learning together.
And there's no cheskas tahar of anybody today, so.
That's for sure. So let's see. Now, we do have a chazaka that Richie is asleep, so that's not good. And then the question is, what about, well, Yaakov, we know we'll never have a camera, but what about the big N? And what about Calvin? How about that? Not getting any response over there. We've got
Calvin. That's my regular Ledavar.
That is definitely regular Ledavar.
I'm joining Richie in the nap.
So we've still got our holdouts over here. Okay. Anyway, thank you. That's definitely encouraging. But now I still have to see your expressions. Okay. So because I'm about to explain things that I've really never seen explained, and I think it's very important to catch these inyanim and understand what we mean bichlal when we're talking about the idea of tumat hatahom. The concept of raglayim ledavar, we're going to see, fits with the general idea that we're talking about over here, which is that we don't need the actual yediyah of the tuma. We need for it to have entered into the scheme of things of people who are living in the world. That's the point. Once it becomes accessible to them, then even if they don't know about it yet, that's considered to be part of things. I believe that the meaning of the raglayim ledavar is that once the person is aware of his own tuma because of his cheskas tuma, then that means that the level of his sensitivity to getting out of tuma is mechayev him to be more aware of the possibilities of even the tuma tatahom. And therefore, it's not just the question of let's follow the chazaka. It's that because of the cheskas tuma, there is indeed less of an element of nobody knows about this on the face of this planet. The implications, by the way, of this entire idea that anyone on the face of the planet, and this means literally, if there is one person, this makes a big nafkamina la'alocha, the simple nafkamina la'alocha, is that if this body was murdered, it cannot be Tumat HaTahom, because there's a murderer who knew about it. There's someone on the planet that knew about the fact that this Tuma exists, because he shot the guy. Okay, so what we really and truly mean, if it entered into the consciousness of the world, this is the only place that we have an idea like this, except for Gan Eden, you'll notice. The idea that the consciousness of one individual is definitive about the entire halacha doesn't appear anywhere. We always think about things in terms of the individual that is involved, not about the theoretical consciousness on the planet. That's an absolutely stunning new idea. From the time of Adam Arishon, we haven't had that concept. So we're talking about something really remarkable. Okay.
I think we had a similar concept with Rabbi Tolles about Grau learning a sugya and finding the solution, and then the...
I understand, but it's not Nogea la Halacha.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, I'm saying, but that something should actually be the difference between Lavda v'Lashamra, or the difference over here in the Dinim of Tuma. That's amazing.
So, Rabbi, he should be even aware of something that is unknown to anybody just because of his state of Tuma?
Sorry?
He has to be aware of something that nobody knows about because he's in a state of... The one who's
No, but he's in a higher level of awareness of the possibilities of Tuma. So to him, you can't say it's really hidden because his mind is thinking about it. That's the point. So he feels suspicious in the literal sense of Raglayim Adavar. He feels, I got to worry about this, you know, can I really be sure that I'm taller? Normally, a person doesn't think, maybe there's a body at the bottom of the Mara. That's crazy. Why would I think somebody was shot? No, not shot. Somebody fell into the mikveh and drowned. No, that's like weird. Okay, so Minani Mila. Okay, the question is, where does all of this come from? That there's a din of Tumat HaTahom. Now, in the end, we're going to see that, obviously, this complexity is only possible in Halakha L'Mashmi Sinai. However, we do have interesting psukim that start making it clear that the entry into the world is important. So Rabbi Elazar says, look, the whole deal of Tumas Meis is introduced by the Nazir, V'chiyamut Meit Alav, that's a very strange language, isn't it? Well, if this guy goes up and dies on him, what do you mean dies on him? What is dying on him supposed to mean? Well, it means what it means in English. He went up and died on me. What does that mean? That means that it was something that was nogea me and that I knew about. That's the difference between just the fact of something or the fact that it's nogea me. So if it says alav, it means it has to be michuveret lo. It has to be clear to him, which means not if he couldn't know anything about it. Rish Lakish says, well, when it comes to Korban Pesach, where we also have the din of Tumas HaTahom, it says, Kiyet Tamei LaNefesh O B'Derech Rechoka. Putting those two things together, I mean, that is sort of a weird, if somebody's on the highway or dead, what's going on? If somebody was exposed to Tamei Meter, is on the highway. I mean, those things are not part of the same set at all, are they? Well, they can't get there. And the other one is that I'm Tame. So what it's coming to tell me by putting these two things together is that the Tuma and the Derech are similar in the sense that highways are open to all. And it has to be like a Derech. So just like a Derech is Bigalui, Afkol is Bigalui. That's Reish Lakish's understanding of a Remez to Tumat HaTahom. Ask the Gemara, but wait a minute. It says in the Brighter that a Zoe... Tuma, that's a question whether it should say at the Tanya or not, but we've talked about that many times. Hey, Zoe Tumat HaTahom, Kol She'eino Makira, even Echad B'Sof HaOlam. Avo Makira Echad B'Sof HaOlam, if there's anyone, anywhere on the planet, that knows or did know of such a thing, Ein Zu Tumat HaTahom. I mean, I understand if you want to take the approach of it needing to be like a road. So you could say a road, that's sort of open to anybody. But if you say Beit Alav, Alav is very personal. Mechuveret lo means he's supposed to know about it. Not that there's someone in Timbuktu who knows about it. So Makira, Achad, Besof Olam, how does that make it Mechuveret lo? And the truth is, even with Rish Lakish's explanation of a derech, what are you going to do about the case of Hadatanya, Hamotzei Meit, Mushkav L'Rochu, Ba'ashel Derech? You find a dead body that is lying totally across a road, such that anybody who crossed that area would have been impossible not to have passed over a mate, and therefore to become a Be'el HaMeit. So when it comes to Truma, he's Tomei. When it comes to Nazir and Asiyas Pesach, he's Tohar. Why is that? Where would we come up with the difference of that based on the pasuk? Now, you know, this is extremely confusing, because the truth is it has nothing to do with the difference between Truma and Pesach and Nazir. It has to do with the question of whether it's ex post facto or whether it defines the future, as we explained. Tumata Tahom is irrelevant for the future because now you know about it. So now you're Tameh and now you can't eat Truma. If you found out about it before the Naziris would end, it's the same thing. Now I know about it. So now I can't end my Naziris until I keep the whole deal about Tuma. Same thing is about the Pesach. If I find out about it before I brought my Carbon Pesach, now I can't bring my Carbon Pesach. It's not as if Tumat HaTahom does not make you Tomei for Pesach, but does make you Tomei for Truma. Now, what are you going to say? If you already ate the Truma, you don't have to vomit it up? I mean, the case of the Truma, it's always going to be the future. In the case of Pesach and Nazir, we could be talking about ex post facto, in which case it's all going to be Nogeya B'diavad. So the phraseology over here is a little bit misleading, because what it really means is, how do we know that it's only ex post facto? That's what we're really asking. That's what the question boils down to. So what would be the difference? Either it is Tomei or it's not Tomei. Therefore, we can't bring a raya from those psukim to all of these distinctions, can we? Ela tumata tohom, gemora gemirila. Must be, therefore, that all of these pratim are actually halakha l'mesher misinai, and that what we need to understand is the level of awareness that we're talking about. But to look into the pasuk for the details of this and that and all of these questions, you're not going to find it in the pasuk anyway. Okay, now let's take a look at the way that the Mishnah said it. Im'at shelo gilach. So first of all, gilach. Who's the man diomar that focuses on the haircut? Because is the haircut really what's important? Is the haircut really what's going to define the ex post facto state of the Nazir? And once he got his haircut, he's definitely not going to have to worry about it. So who would that be? Rabbi Yochanan. That could only be Rabbi Eliezer. Remember that it's Rabbi Eliezer who holds that the tiglachat is ma'akevet. According to the Rabbanan, the tiglachat is not the issue. It's one of the damim of the karbanos that's the issue. So now, remember what the din is according to Rebbe Eliezer. Because Rebbe Eliezer says that if you have tuma that comes li'achar hamalot, so then even though you didn't yet do your tiglachat, but if it's after the number of days of your naziris, which remember we have a takana d'rabbanan, in order that people should not get mixed up between Stam Naziris, Hareini Nazir, or Hareini Nazir Shloshim Yom, which are not the same, because the Shloshim Yom is 30 complete days, and Hareini Nazir might be only 29 days, or it would be Yimiktus Yom Kukuloi. So we made a takana. Never bring your karbanos until 31 days, right? So now, according to Rebbe Eliezer, so if you were Tomei La'achar Melot, the din would be that you're only going to be Soyser Shivat Yomim, right? Not 30 days. According to Rabbanan, it's going to be 30 days. Now keep this in mind, because now I want to understand what exactly do we mean over here? Do we mean that the Tuma occurred Toch Malot, or that you found out about it Toch Malot? So by Rami Barcha, my first general question, the Gemara takes this as a general question. let's say a Nazir was Tomei, whatever the case is, Tumas Atom, Tuma Yedua, and he only finds out about it afterwards. Now we're not talking about whether it was known. We're talking about whether he knows, right? Don't confuse the two. Tumat HaTohom has nothing to do with your personal yediyah. Now I'm just curious. Suppose you yourself found out about the fact that you became Tomei, either with Tumat HaTohom or with regular Tuma. So what defines the point that that Tuma actually affects you? Mao, do we go according to when you found out? So in other words, because that's the first thing that I want to understand about this Mishnah, right? I mean, like, at what point does it affect me? So if I find out about it, what's the din? Mao baser yediya azlina? The yediya achar malot? Maybe we go according to the time that it actually happened. So we might go after the time that you found out about it. And if the case where you found out about it after the Naziris was already completed, so then I need to know, Lamai. I need to know for what? How much, we'll see in the end, it's going to be how much will he be soter? Is he going to be soter 7 days? Or is he going to be soter 30 days? Now, that's rather obvious, isn't it, gentlemen? That that's what we're obviously, Lamai. What do you mean, Lamai? Let me start. What? Well, what else are we talking about, for God's sake? This makes no sense. Of course, Lamai, let me start. Again, I haven't seen anyone who explains this, and I think that this is a wonderful, wonderful key to understanding the sugya. But you must pay attention. The Gemara makes absolutely no sense. The Mishnah just openly said, what does the Mishnah say? A Nazir found out about the fact that he was Tomei afterward. It says Beferish. He was Tomei in the middle, and he found out that he was Tomei. For God's sakes, that's the case in the Mishnah. Beferish, right? Nazir Shegilach v'nodalo shu Tomei. He found out that he was Tomei. So then that means it's Soter. It says Beferish. Im Tuma Yudua Soter. Whenever it was that he was Tomei, as soon as he finds out that that had happened, he has to keep his Naziris over again. Now, what kind of stupid question is it to say? Do we mean when he finds out, or do we mean when it happened? The Mishnah's talking about when he found out. What happened? How can we ask such an absurd question? That is answered by the last two words on the Amud. Lamai, let me start. Vis-a-vis what question? Vis-a-vis the question of canceling the time. So you'll say, I don't understand. It says Beferish in the Mishnah, Soter. What does that change? Ah, that's the question. Could the word Soter in the Mishnah mean it canceled everything that he did about his Taira? Meaning it cancels the Karbanos, and there, because you can't bring a Karban when you're Tameh, in which case it destroyed your Tiglachot, because you did your Tiglachot on a Karban puzzle, and therefore you're going to have to redo it. But that doesn't mean necessarily it's so to the days. So when the Gemara speaks out, Lamai, Lamistar, it says, I mean in terms of the days, which is not what we've been talking about until now. You see? So that is the way that the Rush answers. I mean, he doesn't point out those words, which I think are extremely helpful in saying it. But the idea that when we're talking in the Mishnah, Lamistar has got to have an alternative explanation, or the Gemara is completely mind-bogglingly stupid. I mean, how are you asking what the Mishnah holds about when it says so? So that is how he explains it, that there's two possibilities in the use of the word soter. Soter the korbanot, or, which is the same idea of the Karban Pesach, mind you, right? The din of Tuma Yedua versus Tuma Satom by Karban Pesach is, did it ruin your Karban Pesach? So over here, the question is, did it ruin your Karban Naziris? But what I want to know, says Rami Bar Kama, I want to know what the din would be in terms of the days. What would it be soter? Ah, good question, says the Gemara. Let's analyze the Mishnah up close, and you'll see the answer. Omar Rava, well, it's very clear from the Mishnah as well. Why? Because the Mishnah says, Im ad shelo gilach ben kach u ben kach soter. If he hadn't yet done his taira, then it will be soter. So tell me what you think we're talking about over here, okay? Echidami. Does it mean im ad shelo gilach he was tame, or does it mean im ad shelo gilach he found out about it? Well, let's think about that. Echidami. Did he find out about it while it was still in the middle of his naziris? What do you think? If he found out about his tumah in the middle of his naziris, it's soter. I mean, is there any two-year-old who doesn't know that that's true? That's a mefarish pasuk. If a nazir became tamei and he knew he was tamei in the middle of his naziris, all of a sudden, at the end of his second nazir, we need a mishnah to tell me, oh, by the way, you would be soter. That's crazy. We've had 100 mishnayos that he's been soter. Of course he's soter. And don't try to tell me that, well, but because we introduce now the new idea of tumas atahom, maybe tumat atahom wouldn't be soter, because the mishnah said beferish the difference between right at the opening of the mishnah, that if it was tumat atahom and he found out about it afterwards, then it's not soter. Okay, but that's very clear that if he knew about it during the time, that it is soter, and there's no difference between tumat atahom and tumah yedua. So therefore, the mishnah cannot be telling us something that is absurdly evident. Tzricha l'meimar? You really need a mishnah to tell me that a nazir is going to be soser his days? No. So we've got to be talking about over here that he found out about it. It's got to be li'achar melot. So he finds out about it. The tumah could have been on the first day, on the middle day, whatever. And now the mishnah is telling us that if he found out about it, ad shelo gilach, that's the difference. So this is, when did you find out? So here he found out about it achar malot, but he found out that he was tamei during the malot. And it's telling me over here that actually it's going to be soter. So you see that where the mishnah is referring to is a case where the tumah was during the malot, and the nazir found out about it after the malot, and we see that it is still going to cause stira. I understand, Rava, but you're not answering Rami Bar Chama's question. Rami Bar Chama's question is, do we treat it like the number of days, according to Rabbi Eliezer, 7 days, as if the tumah occurred li'achar malot? Or do we treat it to 30 days of stira, that you need to regrow your hair, as if it was tumah during the malot? Wasn't that his question? You're not answering that, are you? So v'adayinti b'elecha, kulo soter or shiva soter? That's our question. No. You're not thinking. Who's the question going according to? Okay? Is it going according to Rabbanan? Of course not. The Rabbanan don't hold that there's ever 7 days. They always hold it's 30 days, and they don't care when. It would only be asked, I'll leave it to Rabbi Eliezer, right? So Laman, ilema libe de Rabbanan. Of course, pshita de kulo soter, because no matter when, the Rabbanan hold that you always need shloshim yom. And if you're asking according to Rabbi Eliezer, didn't we say that tumah that comes achar malot is soser shiva? Yes, we did say that. But this is the question. Does it mean tumah that occurred after malot is shiva? Or does Rabbi Eliezer mean tumah that you found out about achar malot is soser shiva? That's Rami Bar Chama's question. So where did Rebbe Eliezer say it's always shiva? That's only hani miliki nitma liachar malot. But over here, the tumah was from before. So would Rebbe Eliezer say that, okay, so then you need 30 days? O dilma, shani achar, the idea achar maloti. Now, this has nothing to do with tumat atahom and the din of tumah yedua. This has to do with your personal yedia, whether the din of the difference between tumah la'achar malot or tumah lifnei malot is defined by when you know about it, or is it defined by when it happened. So notice we started off with a mishnah that seemed to be telling us one topic. It turns out that it's relevant to the entire question of the relationship of awareness to the dinim of the tumah and the naziris, and it opens up an entirely new way of our understanding the person's relationship towards his naziris and towards the days of the naziris that he kept. That was Rami's question. So now I'm looking for the answer. says the Gemara, well, you know the answer. The answer is still clear from Rava's diuk in the Mishnah. Umina. Take the same diuk that we had and analyze the same words in the Mishnah, and you will see your answer. Because the Mishnah says, Bein kach u bein kach soter. The Mishnah says very clearly, Rava already proved to us, that the Mishnah is talking about a case where the person found out about his tumah at the end of the malot. And it does not make any distinction whatsoever between the tumah that was there at the beginning, in the middle, or the tumah itself came after malot. It makes no difference. It only matters when the person found out. So that's your answer. It means that the din is exactly the same. It's all defined by when you found out. So just like everyone understands that Aliyah ben Rebbe Eliezer, if the tumah occurs li'achar malot on day 31, so what's the din? He loses 7 days for hair regrowth, right? Okay. So then if that's the case, even the tumah that occurred in the middle of the malot, but you found out about it li'achar malot, you said that the Mishnah is talking about exactly that case. In which case the Mishnah is saying, what defines stirat nezirut? When you find out, not when it actually occurred. The Mishnah itself says at the very opening that if he finds out, he says everything. I already explained to you that that means possibly he says everything in terms of the korban, but not that he says his days. And that's the way that Rav is now proving that the Mishnah implies. So things here are very different than what they appear to be at the beginning of the Mishnah. And we end up proving it from the Mishnah itself. That's what's so remarkable. Once again, Rebbe has done a bang-up job of presenting things in exactly the way that proves to you don't know what you're talking about. Almost as good as nature itself. It's absolutely brilliant. Okay, so now let's get into some of these halachas to get the details of the concepts of tumat haton. Tana rabban. Amotzei meit mutal rochba shel derech. So we've got this braita in which we find that there's a body that's been lying across a road. We have no way to walk down that street without becoming tamei betumas meis by being mayel over the meis. So, benogeya, the future. Can I eat truma if I'm a kohen? Can I eat truma or am I tamei? Definitely your tamei. But what about someone who is wondering what the din is of his naziris and his osa pesach, where he already brought the pesach, where he already concluded all of what was ma'akev of his naziris. So then what's the din? He's tahar. But when is all of this true, that it's tamei for truma? Bamedvar mamurim, she'ein lo makom la'avar. There was absolutely no way to get by here without going over it. Ava yesh lo makom la'avar, you would be tahar even for truma, if there's some way. Because if it's theoretically possible, since you're on a road and you're in a Rishus HaRabim, so the din is, if it's a Suffolk, call Suffolk Rishus HaRabim is star. And that would be true even for Achilas Truma. So there we have no problem. In that case, Afla Truma Tahar. But when do we say this? Aba Medvar Mamurim, when do we say that for sure you're Tamei, if there is no way around? That is only where we find an entire body. But suppose mishubar o meforak. Suppose what we have maybe is skeletal remains that are broken up. It's not all in one piece. So then afilu ein makom la'avar, chayshinan shema bein prakim avar. Remember that we've spoken about a number of cases where the word chayshinan is used for kula. We can be choshesh that Shema Ben Prakim Avar. Doesn't mean we're chayesh l'chumra, it means we're chayesh l'kula. Remember, the outstanding case, as Tosfos brought, is the Gemara about not posseling, which is an absolutely crazy situation, where it says Chashinon, we are not going to assume that there was a mamzerus or a znus, because we're afraid that this woman got pregnant in a bathtub that someone had ejaculated into. Afraid? No. In other words, chayshinan, and we rely on that. So we see, says Tosfos, the word chayshinan is used clearly where it means chayshinan lakula, that we can actually assume something. That's what it means over here. Chayshinan lakula. Shema ben prakim avar. So since it's possible, because when a person walks, they don't necessarily walk in a straight line. They move a little bit each time. They're moving a little bit to the right, a little bit to the left. Now, even though you cannot walk a straight line and get by this entire remains, but you might have actually sort of seesawed your way through, you know, which you were moving a little bit here and you actually managed to get through. So if it's a Suffolk tumor, do you know for sure your tummy? No. So, but you know 99% your tummy. Oh, doesn't matter. The amount that you're sure is irrelevant. That's a Suffolk. And since we have a called Suffolk tumor b'rishut harabim, the din is Suffolk tumor b'rishut harabim is tahar. So
Rebbe said by accident he'd make his way through. Wouldn't a person
wait, English.
Wouldn't a person with intention try avoid a dead corpse naturally, not by accident?
There is no dead corpse visible. It's under the ground.
Oh, it's under the ground.
It was found afterwards.
Uh-huh.
Nimtza. So therefore, we can chashinan, we can assume, strange use of the word, shema ben prakim avar, and that's enough. But suppose it was inside of a kever. So then even if the remains are busted up, then he would be tamei, mipnei shekever mitzarfo. Because we know that the halacha is, as we saw before, that a kever is mitzarev, the remains. Now, this is a little bit strange because later on, the Braita, the next few words, is going to say it depends whether it was Tumas Tahom or Tumas Yedua. But remember, Tumas Tahom is only where nobody ever knew about it. So who buried this person in his grave? If nobody ever knew about it, how could it possibly be Tumata Tahom? So we had a little bit of a problem. Right? So Tosfos answers that what must have been talking about, this is a crazy case, must have been talking about that they had dug a kever to bury someone in. In the end, they ended up taking him to some other Beit HaKvarot. Meanwhile, some guy stumbles into the kever, is killed as he falls into the kever. And then they come back and they say, oh my gosh, we left a wide open kever. Somebody might fall in. They don't bother looking in to see if anybody fell in. And they just bring a bulldozer and they fill in the kever. So that would have to be the crazy case, right? Okay. So you know that when you're worried that maybe someone will fall in, you should worry maybe someone did fall in. But okay, that's the way human minds work. So therefore, even if it would be Meshubar and Mefurak, there'd be no way to get by. Mipnei shekever mitzarfo. Furthermore, where can we say that maybe he made it through? That's only where he was on foot and on his own. But suppose he was carrying a big backpack. Then there's no way that he could have danced his way through because he would have been bent over. If he was bent over, then he was definitely going to be exposed to some element. Or if he was driving by, or if he was being carried by, I mean, for sure over there, he's going to be over the mace at some point. So if he was ta'un or he's rachuv, for there he's tameh, because there he's spread out. And once he's spread out, he's going to be makabel tuma through the oel. So, if you're walking on foot, yes, you can go by without touching, without moving, without making an oil. But if you're loaded down or you're riding, now, overall, what is the case over here? Was this body known or not? That depends. So what we're talking about over here is betumata tahom. But if we're talking about tum'ah yedu'ah, so if it's Tumah Yedu'ah, then the original distinction that we made between Truma and between Korban Pesach and Nazir is no longer meaningful. Because over there, all three, Pesach, Nazir, Truma would be exactly the same, and they would all be Tameh. Ve'ezohi Tumat HaTohom, Kol She'in Makira Echad B'Sof HaOlam. There's no one anywhere on the planet that knows about it. But if Makira Echad B'Sof HaOlam, Ein Zu Tumat HaTohom. So when we're talking about Tumat HaTohom, again, this is the way that we explained it. I cannot say that I saw any Rishonim that explained it this way, but I'm convinced that this is true. That Hoya Tamun Beteven O Bitzrorot Harezu Tumat HaTohom. What we need to be talking about is not that we know someone saw it, but rather that the idea is that it's in a position in which it is accessible to people to see it. And therefore, it is now part of the face of the earth, so to speak. And it's now part of the information which the earth contains. So if we're going to talk about a body that could easily be in this kind of situation in a way that it was never open to discovery. So it's underneath a bunch of gravel or maybe straw. Now, someone could easily have fallen there, died in their sleep, or had a heart attack, or whatever it is, just sunk under there. Then that's called Tumat HaTohom. But if it's floating on the water, Bayamim, or it's dark, so you'll say, well, I mean, nobody would have seen it in the dark. When Nikikea Silaim, that doesn't matter, because even though it's not known that we know that someone knew about it, it certainly is possible to be known, and therefore it is called you know, there's this whole question about what's called peeking into Schrodinger's box, right? So it's really the sugya of Tumas HaTohom that's the solution. What is called information? So it has to be knowable, but it doesn't necessarily have to be known. That's what the Sergei seems to be saying, right? So once it's in a way in which it's exposed and part of the information on the earth, it's not called Tumat HaTohom. Furthermore, this din of Tumat HaTohom is limited to Tumas Meis, but there are other cases where a Tuma would be by definition Tumat HaTohom, and nonetheless, it would not be Nogea. Even, let's say, the famous case of Tumat HaTohom Dezivais would be where you have, let's say, a Zov on his seventh day, he goes to the mikveh, he becomes Tahor, brings his korban by having it sent for him, and then he has another Re'iyah before the end of the day, in which case he retroactively was a Zov. That's the ultimate Tumat HaTohom, because you can only know about it afterwards, right? If Afal Pikein, that information is not called irrelevant, is still not nogea. It's only the question of mace that we have this whole halacha. And then we said that it's all a function of the chazaka. So this leads to another point. Before we even get there, the Mishnah spoke about a case where there was a mace that was floating on top of the water in the Ma'ara. And we want to know whether, what do we want to know? Do we want to know whether the person who went into the Ma'ara came into contact with that mate? Or do we want to know whether the mate had floated underneath the covering of the Ma'ara at the same time that the person who had gone down into the Ma'ara was there? So there's another fascinating issue that our sugya brings up, which is Merumas in the Mishnah, and which is a brand new idea. And that is that the concept of Tuma itself, where you're talking about something which is metame, it has to be a suffix of being metame on the earth. If it is not in a particular state in the earth, and how would that be? Maybe it's floating. Maybe it's flying. It's being blown through the air. In any case like that, then it is not yet part of the status of issues that needs to be determined. And remarkably, there is no such thing as a Sofek Tuma, which would be Tomei B'Rishut HaYachid, if this object is not in the Rishut HaYachid. This is amazing, because remember, by Shabbos, we have a concept of Hanacha, right? You're not Chayiv in Hotza'a from Rishut HaYachid to Rishut HaRabim, which you think has nothing to do with Tuma, because Rishut HaYachid and Rishut HaRabim are defined in Shabbos by the status of the Mechitza, and are defined when it comes to Tuma by the status of the consciousness, how many people are present, right? And yet, amazingly, it still is a function of where you are, even though the status of the where may be defined by consciousness or by mechitzas, but still, to define where something is, it needs to be at rest. So suppose you have something floating in the Rishut HaYachid, that is not a Sofek Tuma B'Rishut HaYachid. And therefore, if you have a Sofek Nigia, where it's Sofa, there's no such thing as a Sofek Sofa. So that's why when the Mishnah talks about Tuma, that is Yadua, and Tuma, that is Tumas HaTahom, when it talked about a Tzaf, a body that was Tzaf, it was only Nogea Tumas Meis Ba'oyal, because Ba'oyal, it's defined as being in the oil by the nature of Tumas oil, you see, and therefore it doesn't matter. So, but if something is Tzafa, and it, let's say we're talking about a Sheretz that's Tzafa, a Sheretz that's Tzafa, and you don't know whether you touched it or not, is never a Sofek Tuma B'Rishut HaYachid, D'Tanya. Because we actually learn, and this is a Beferisha Mishnah, really, so may, if you take a look in the Rosh, the gear says D'Tanan. So D'Tanan, Sofek Tuma Tzafa, if I'm not sure whether I came into contact with a floating sheretz, the body of a sheretz, one of the Shemona Shrotzim, which is Metame, doesn't matter whether it's floating on a body of water or it's floating in a bucket and is nowhere near any body of water, Bein Bekelim, Bein Bekarka, it's tahor. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says, no, if it's inside of a bucket, the bucket is defined as being in this Rishus HaYachid. And there's no din of its floating. That's not called floating. It's only if it's Bekarka, then we say that it's tahor. And a Sofek Tzafa is never called a Sofek Tuma Rishut HaYachid. Where do we get this from? Maybe we should do this tomorrow, because I don't want to hold you too long. Okay, we'll look into the nature of the Pesukim tomorrow. Gentlemen, we have learned a tremendous amount of new material today, and I think it would be worthwhile to do a Chazara before we continue tomorrow. These are sugyas that are nogea in so many places in Shas, and they are mind-expanding sugyas. They open you up to whole new areas that most people don't know even exists in the Torah. That's one of the marvels of Daf Yomi, is that the exposure level is remarkable. You don't want the Torah to be a Torah Satayim, as we mentioned. So it's got to be that you knew about it somewhere on earth. Akiva, did you want to say something?
No, it's just, Rabbi, I've been going through these things and like black holes and infinity, whatever, dream documentaries. And like these issues, it's amazing. All these scientists are struggling with these issues. It's the most amazing thing.
Yeah.
Like the cleverest minds are struggling with this whole thing.
Right. Okay, it's unbelievable. I told you about Herman Wolk. He used to give the Daf Yomi. You know who Herman Wolk is? Yeah. So he's a very, very famous author. It was The Winds of War and all of those books. But he had also written Kaylee Van Veyu, was the This Is My God, he wrote. Anyway, so he used to give the Daf Yomi, and he used to give the Daf Yomi in these like really fancy places. And, skiing resorts and so on. And so he was in a place where he had Richard Feynman and a number of others of the, absolutely top physicists. And they wanted to hear the Daf Yomi. And he presented different shilas to them. And they were like, got so involved in trying to figure out what the shilas was. He says, you know, he wrote a book, I think he was already 100 years old when he wrote his last book, where he talks about some of these mice and the things that he had brought up to them from the Daf Yomi, and how excited they were, the interactions that were between like these literal top Nobel Prize winning physicists, or what they're doing with the Daf Yomi. Quite amazing. Okay, Rabosai, looking forward, Bezrat Hashem, to see you tomorrow. And make sure it's a Torah Yidua, not a Torah Satayim. Go to everyone.